Greetings and welcome on board our Sunrise program. I'm Mark Lawrence. We have on the news line with us now Dr. Lindsay Leininger. She's a clinical professor of business administration and a public health scientist at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth. Thank you so much for calling in again, Lindsay. Very glad to talk to you.
Mark, thanks for having me.
Since we last spoke in the spring, you've become the CEO of Dear Pandemic, so you're helping to oversee the operations. How has explain to our audience what Dear Pandemic is and how it has evolved since spring and summer.
Sure. So Dear Pandemic is an educational campaign providing trustworthy and timely information on the pandemic. Our biggest platform is Facebook, where we're cresting on about 50,000 followers. We also have an Instagram and Twitter accounts and a website. We've done, as a team, over 200 traditional media appearances as well. So we're really trying to get out good public health messaging that helps people stay safe and stay sane.
And this started out as simply an effort for some volunteers, all women, all eggheads of one form or another, or nerds, as you call yourself, in and around Dartmouth, to make sure that accurate information got out there or just basic questions got answered.
That's right, Mark. It really just started as questions that we were fielding from our own friends and family. Questions like, should I be wiping down my groceries, or is it safe to take a jog? I mean, these were the sorts of things that we weren't sure about back in March. And what happened was a few scientists, we learned that we were all fielding similar questions from our friends and our family. So we decided to join together in a pooled effort to sort of, quote unquote, share the load, right, and be a little more efficient. And if I answered a question for my family, one of my colleagues' family members might have that question too. And it just sort of grew from there. And now we run it like a dedicated newsroom. We have an editorial calendar. We have people from all sorts of different disciplines that pertain to the pandemic, whether that be epidemiology or mental health. We are still all female, and our moniker, Those Nerdy Girls, was given to us by an early reader, actually, who said, you know, I'm just going to trust Those Nerdy Girls with my pandemic news. And the name is stuck, and I think it's kind of become a bit of a brand unintentionally.
Well, and it, I guess it applies. You're all very science-oriented. You're also a most of you anyway are family-oriented folks, but you just love science and the quirks and the fun and the really the sometimes the humorous aspects of this. Well, and Dear Pandemic also has been fighting an uphill battle all along against what you termed the infodemic when we were talking here. Tell us about this infodemic that's underway.
Sure. Well, the World Health Organization has come out and publicly declared that in addition to fighting the global pandemic, it also needs to launch a fight on a different front, and that's on the misinformation front lines. So, quote-unquote, infodemic is this constant swirling of information overwhelm that we're all taking in, and some of that's good information and some of it's bad information, but it's just a fire hose worth of information that needs managing so people can have good evidence-based takes on what it takes to live through the pandemic.
And some of the misinformation out there, dangerous? I mean, these are things that really can lead to injury or death if people don't heed or were to heed something incorrect?
Sadly, yes. We have seen straight up dangerous information out there in terms of treatments that are untested or claims that are false. Like, for instance, masks don't save lives. They do. I think what is even harder often is just there's a huge glut of information. So while a lot of the really toxic misinformation, we can battle that and we can sort of bat that down, often people just kind of disengage from all of it because there's just so much to vet and to work through. So I think the combination of the bad stuff being out there and that causing a lack of trust even in the good stuff has just made people really kind of cynical about news and in general and who they can actually trust to get through this pandemic safely.
All right, well, let's talk about what is the timely question. We're on the news line with Dr. Lindsay Leininger of Dartmouth, and we want to ask, as we head towards Thanksgiving and Christmas, is there a safe way to meet?
Oh, Mark, this is the question of the day, and I'm sorry that I don't have great news on this front. So here's the tricky thing about this virus. The same things that sustain us emotionally and spiritually, like Thanksgiving gatherings and Christmas celebrations and Hanukkah and honoring Hanukkah traditions, are the same things that spread the virus really well. So this is the year of our shared sacrifice, unfortunately, of the holiday season, and we just must embrace ways to celebrate creatively, hold on to the traditions, hold on to what's sacred with our friends and families, but not share indoor air with each other.
So a no family gathering, is there, what are some guidelines that we can use if we want to do something or anything on Thanksgiving?
Well, I am doing Zoom with my parents. I live in New Hampshire. My parents live at home back in Texas. We were all going to be together. Sadly, we can't, so we are going to use technology to be together. The other tradition that I have always been happy about is going to my neighbor's house for pie, for dessert on Thanksgiving. And we're actually going to keep that tradition. They're going to come over, and they're going to stand in our driveway, and they're going to bring their pie, and we're going to have ours, and we're still going to be together. So we're finding new ways to celebrate traditions of being together. So I think being creative, being outside is everything. We have just really learned how important being outside is in terms of being protected when we gather together socially. So that's recommendation number one. Also, masks are important, avoiding poorly ventilated spaces, avoiding large gatherings, sadly even those of 10 to 15 people from households that don't live together can spread the virus quite efficiently. And we know that we need to keep our interactions short as well. So even 15 minutes cold driveway pie with the neighbors can do a lot of good for my spirits, but it can also keep us all healthy.
Well, yeah, plus it puts something on your calendar, so you have something written down, something to look forward to.
That's exactly right, and I think we'll be doing a bonfire. Again, I live in rural northern New Hampshire, so I know it depends on where people's locations are, but we actually have space for a bonfire, and we'll be doing a bonfire with some families as well that weekend.
Well, let's talk about the status of the pandemic itself. Now, as we record this, we're just a little bit more than a week before Thanksgiving, but every conceivable measure is on the increase, and we have new records every day.
Indeed, and it's really, it just makes your heart stop and your heart break when you look at the way the cases are climbing, what we're seeing in our healthcare systems, all the burnt out healthcare workers. We are really in a bad spot, and this is going to be a hard, long winter. Now, here's what gives me faith and helps me wake up in the morning. Hope is on the way. This is what Dr. Fauci said as soon as he saw the good vaccine news that we got this week and last week. Hope is on the way. The vaccine news is even better than any of the scientists anticipated. So we really have to pull together to make it through this winter, and things will be better on the horizon.
Well, as we get closer to a vaccine, from a public health standpoint, brace us for a vaccine so that we're not surprised how it gets rolled out. Tell us a little bit about the protocols and the who goes first, that kind of thing. Tell us just a little bit about that we do know.
Sure. So I think the first thing that everybody should know in terms of thinking through vaccine confidence is that all of the science is very rigorous, and there have been zero shortcuts on the science and the clinical trials. So I think we can trust that the safety profile and the science is good, and we can trust what we learn from the trial results. I think the toughest thing about vaccination for many of us who are not frontline healthcare workers or others who will get priority in terms of distribution is that we're going to be playing a waiting game. Appropriately, the vaccine distribution is going to go towards priority populations such as doctors and nurses, people who live in and work in facilities that are institutional, so you can think of nursing homes or prisons or jails. And then the rest of us will slowly come online in terms of getting our turn to take a vaccine. So we have a bit of a waiting game, which I know can be frustrating. But again, I think knowing that that light at the end of the tunnel is there just really helps my spirits.
What do all these positive tests mean? Tell us what having a record number of people test positive for COVID-19, what does it mean? And maybe what does it not mean?
Well, I think the numbers are real in the sense that the trends are increasing, and they're increasing a lot. We are definitely seeing more circulating disease in the community. And those increases in positive cases are not due to increased testing. So the cases are outrunning the increases in testing. So we think this is a real and very serious surge.
And what doesn't it mean? Do we have more COVID than we did in the spring? Is this more deadly, less deadly? Tell us what also is noted.
Yeah, these are great questions, and they're hard to tease out. But what we do know so far is right now we have a lot of circulating disease. We are headed for our highest levels of circulating disease and may be there depending on the assumptions that you make already. As for whether or not it's more or less deadly, this is actually a tricky question in terms of teasing out a various series of factors. But what we do know is that doctors on the front lines and nurses on the front lines have gotten better at treating this, which is wonderful. The clinical protocols have been optimized. We do have some new treatments now, like dexamethasone, the steroid that's been demonstrated to be effective, and remdesivir, an antiviral that's also effective. But these are not silver bullets, and really the best tool in our arsenal remains keeping our space, wearing a mask, protecting each other until we get to vaccine.
Death rates are lower now than they were in the spring for individuals who get it. Is that why? Because you have so many more treatments that are available?
That's a great question. So we scientists talk about that as a quote-unquote real effect. So that truly is improved treatment and treatment of the disease. But we also worry about things that we like to call statistical artifacts. So back in the spring, only very sick people were getting tested. And we now know that lots of people walk around with this disease with no symptoms. And really, until more recently, those people weren't getting tests. So what that leads to, just the arithmetic of that, is that we're going to see lower death rates just because of this arithmetic, not because there's been any improvement in survival. So we think there's some kind of just arithmetic things. We think there's some reality in terms of deaths actually being reduced thanks to better protocols. And then there's a third piece of it. People who are catching COVID right now are younger on average, and we would expect their death rates to be lower than older people, just given what we've learned about the disease and its outcomes.
Are there different strains of the disease now than there were in the spring?
So the virus is mutating. I am not an immunologist, so I have to listen to the immunologist on this one and do my best to translate. So the virus is mutating at the same level that we see viruses typically mutate. So it's not changing sufficiently that it is making people more or less sick or is going to be harder or less hard to target with something like a vaccine. It's just doing its normal evolution that coronaviruses typically do.
Well, we often hear public health officials, sort of government officials, say the virus is going to get you, or it's out to get you, or the virus doesn't care. When you hear something like that, what do you say? I mean, I always think, well, the virus doesn't really have an emotion or vengeance or anything like that.
I would say this virus is pretty darn good at being sneaky. Like, this is a sneaky virus. It's really infectious, and that's a problem. And, you know, viruses don't have feelings or bad intent, but boy, this is a sneaky virus. And so I do think, unfortunately, we as human beings are all equal opportunity for this viral infection, whether or not we are Democrat or Republican, man or woman, it does not matter, right? This virus will do its best to find us.
You mean it's going around our masks or lurking in dark corners? In what way?
It does not lurk in dark corners, but what we've learned more and more about is the danger of sharing indoor air in poorly ventilated spaces. This is really how we're learning more and more every day that this is what's causing us to get infected, is sharing air with people who are infected in indoor spaces. So masks are great, because if you sit in an indoor space that's poorly ventilated, masks are going to offer you some protection, and they're going to offer others in that space protection too, if you happen to have the disease unknowingly. It's not sneaking on surfaces, right? We don't need to be worried about wiping down our groceries. That's not how this virus is primarily spreading. But we do need to be very careful to not share indoor air with people outside of our household to the extent possible.
Well, in Pennsylvania, we have a wide range of steps in place, mitigation regulations and so on, restaurant capacities, you can't drink past 11 p.m. if you go to a bar or something like that. I mean, it's just a long, long list of these. Why do we have such a epidemic if we have all these restrictions in place?
That is a great question, and it's a little bit of a chicken and an egg. The epidemic is raging, so the governors and the states are turning up the dimmer on the restrictions switch. So it's sort of hard to know which is the chicken and which is the egg. But here's the deal. What we're learning more and more, this pandemic continues to propagate because of indoor social gatherings primarily. We also continue to see lots of outbreaks in institutional settings like prisons and jails, where there are lots of densely packed people indoors for a long amount of time, is how this virus continues to spread.
And masks really work? How so, against such a sneaky foe?
Masks do work. And I think the way that we like to talk about this as public health people, when we think about all the things we do to protect ourselves and protect others, we like to talk about it as a Swiss cheese approach. So no one tool is perfect on its own. It's got a hole in it. But if you have all the tools stacked up together, you have yourself a block of Swiss cheese where each hole is actually blocked. So when you have the mask and you also keep your space and you keep your interactions short, these things all together are quite protective.
These are all the weapons we can do. What other weapons we got? We're wearing a cloth mask, not a bandana, not just a gaiter. You know, we started to get good decisions about that. N95 masks, strangely enough, never really came available for the general public, so you can't do that. But a good layered cloth mask, hand washing, what else is...
Absolutely. So our nerdy girl team at Dear Pandemic have an acronym called SMART, and how it's important to stay smart. The S is for space, keep it 6 feet or further away. The M is for mask, keep it on. The A is for airflow, outside is best, avoid poorly ventilated indoor spaces. R is for restrict the bubble of people you see indoors. And T is for time limited, so keep your interactions short with others.
All right, and those will help you. For people who do get COVID-19, why is it so varied what they have? We know it's certainly fatal for many hundreds of thousands of people in the U.S. Other individuals say they get a brief fog, fever, and then they feel better.
And up to 40 out of 100 people who get it don't even have any symptoms at all. So this is a real head-scratcher of a virus. And we don't have those answers yet, but the scientists are working very, very hard on figuring this out. Because once we have a better sense of who is at a higher risk of a poor outcome, the better we can develop and target treatments based on those different risk factors. So we're still learning, Mark. We have a lot of humility about what we don't know about this disease still.
And well, this menacing person that has the virus but doesn't know it and has no symptoms would most likely be contagious, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. People who are asymptomatic can absolutely be contagious. And I think another important thing for people to realize is that younger adults are more likely to have asymptomatic infection. So they're less likely to have actual symptoms compared to older adults who catch the virus. So there are even more apparently healthy people walking around, young adults walking around, who are potentially infected than there are older people.
for some of the individuals who do get it, we're starting to talk more about a mental fog that lasts months afterward, or they become long haulers where they have some symptoms for a very long period of time. Tell us about these lingering impacts.
Yeah, so this is long COVID or long haulers, as you mentioned. And like I said, we still as a scientific community don't know a lot about this and are coming at this with a ton of humility. But what I'm really excited to see is the citizen science approach of a lot of these long haulers who have come together to collect their symptoms and share them with medical science teams. So I am hopeful we will learn more about what causes things like the brain fog and other symptoms you mentioned sooner rather than later.
A lot of people don't like the restrictions. They say, well, this impinges on my freedom. I'm staunchly conservative, and this goes against doing anything exactly the same as my neighbor does goes against my mindset. What do you say when you hear those valid concerns on the part of those individuals?
I'm sympathetic because, you know, I'm a native Texan. I believe very strongly in the values of freedom and personal responsibility, so civil liberties is something I take quite seriously. That being said, many conservative, wonderful conservative leaders like Karen Hughes, George W. Bush's former advisor, says, look, wearing a mask is a matter of personal responsibility. We are a society of freedom and liberty and care and concern for the collective. So I think we need to balance both. And we will get through this if we pull together. This is not a virus that cares whether or not we're conservative or liberal. This is a virus that just cares that we're human.
What if we pull out all the stops and say, okay, let's just get it. Let's spread it around. Most young people don't get that sick. Let's have everybody enjoy their bout with coronavirus.
So sadly, that would be a devastation. That would first overwhelm our healthcare system by an order of magnitude we have never seen in this country. We would crush our healthcare system. Second, we would have a lot of needless death and suffering. Again, hope is on the way here. We are close with respect to getting to herd immunity via a vaccine as opposed to what's called natural infection, which is the situation you just described. Now is not the time to give up on protecting each other and ourselves from this virus. We can hang on a little bit longer, and then we can reach immunity via a vaccine as opposed to a continued path of destruction and devastation.
Anything important to mention to our audience that I did not ask you?
Yeah, I think I just want people to know that this is a holiday season of shared sacrifice, and that is hard. I mean, I think I am feeling it personally. We all are feeling it personally. Our brains are just sort of done with this pandemic. Pandemic fatigue is an actual cognitive science phenomenon. So anything we can do to extend a kindness or to redouble our resolve to keep after our productive behaviors for a few more months, now is the time to dig deep.
Please, how do I get a hold of more information from Dear Pandemic? I certainly am familiar with it on Facebook. What do I look up?
Well, thanks for asking, Mark. So dearpandemic.org is our website. It's very easily searchable. We've written on over 600 topics since March, and you can find any of them there.
And you do this with great zeal, and it beats working, I would imagine, for someone like yourself. And it's all volunteer, right?
It's all volunteer. We're just really committed to the mission of getting people trustworthy and timely information while we're all navigating this craziness.
Well, super. Here it's one of the ways in the pandemic you can end up getting a good feeling from the work that you're doing. Thank you so much, Lindsay. Thank you so much for being on the line today.
Oh, Mark, thank you.
Lindsay Leininger is a clinical professor of business administration at Dartmouth. She's a public health scientist at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth.